Growing darkness covered the calm sea, broken only by the faint silvery moonlight and the dim yellow light of fish oil lanterns on the sinking ship. The Delta Blue had quickly and quietly gone to her grave, the cold sea consuming the wild blaze raging over the shattered pirate ship. Slowly sinking, the victorious Constellation was alone in the middle of the ocean, surrounded by a bobbing corona of wreckage and bodies. Knowing their valiant ship was doomed, the crew had blocked the holes in her hull with the sacks of dried fish to slow the rushing water, then chopped holes in the opposite side of the ship to make her sink level and buy them precious minutes to gather supplies. Unfortunately, it was soon discovered that most of the lifeboats used to build the barricade had been badly damaged in the firefight. Lolling belly up, the skiffs were half submerged already. A fight had ensued over one of the intact lifeboats, and fresh blood swirled in the deepening water. Far away from the others, the companions were at the broken bow of the ship, guarding a small skiff piled with their backpacks. At the tiller, Ryan stood holding a lantern salvaged from the quarterdeck. Mildred did the same at the bow, covering the skiff in a nimbus of light. Over the side of the skiff, the splintered planks of the Connie were barely visible below the inch of water covering the main deck. On their other side was the Stygian Sea, stretching to the stars on the horizon and countless miles deep. With every tiny wave, the bottom of their boat scraped against the planks and became a little more buoyant.
Where the hell is he?
Should've gone with.
He's taking way too long. Must be trouble. Give me a lantern, I'll go find him.
No, wait. There he is.
At first only a vague shape, Dean suddenly came into view, sloshing through the ankle-deep water covering the deck. A canvas pack over his shoulder, the youth paused, then carefully skirted the invisible hole in the unseen deck.
Found it!
The teen tossed his backpack of ammo into the lifeboat.
Give me another minute, and I'll grab some more food from the galley.
No time, son. Get in. Gotta make some distance or we'll get caught in the undertow when the Connie goes under.
I can do it!
Want to steer?
Sure.
Head due south. I'm standing guard.
Snuggling into position, Dean tucked the tiller under his armpit, holding on with both hands.
Let's move.
Sitting side by side, JB and Doc took the first set of oars. Christy and Jack took the next set. Mildred stayed in the bow with a lantern held low to watch the surface for submerged obstructions, a blaster at the ready, just in case. Awkwardly at first, then with greater ease, the companions started rowing, the oars hitting the planks and gunwale as the bottom of the skiff scraped noisily across the deck. Then the lifeboat cleared the bow, sinking a good foot into the water. The oars dipped in clean now, without hindrance, and they started moving freely, rapidly building speed. Barely visible in the moonlight, two more boats pulled away from the sinking giant. Jones stood in one, oddly silent for a change, the short man just staring at the listing vessel. Illuminated by a lantern, Abigail was in the other, along with her team of girls and a few wounded men. The creaking of the lowering mast mixed with the splashing of the oars, the loose canvas sails fluttering with sharp snaps in the wind. The skiffs were a dozen yards away when a handful of sailors called for the others to wait as they waded through the knee-deep waters on the vessel. Clumsily going into the sea, they started swimming for the moving skiffs. Nobody slowed or waited for them to catch up.
Damn fools hid until all the work was done. Lazy bastards.
So die. Plenty more fools.
Evolution in action.
How many are there?
Don't know, don't care. This one's ours.
I won't turn away people as long as there's room in the boat. I'm a doctor, for God's sake. We can easily hold two more, maybe three.
Those who reach us first get a berth, and we'll do all the rowing. But once we're full, nobody else. Not going to risk our lives.
Okay, Ryan.
And if they try anyway?
Our lives are theirs, but I don't think it's going to be a problem.
What do you mean, sir?
Sharks.
Sharp fins cut the surface of the water, converging from every direction. There had to have been hundreds. A man screamed and fell in pieces, blood swirling around his struggling form. Another went under without a cry. A third reached a skiff and almost made it aboard when he was yanked back down out of sight. Jones fired a flintlock at the monsters of the deep. A shark was hit by the 75 mini-ball at point-blank range with no noticeable effect. Suddenly, a tattooed hand grabbed the rim of the companion's lifeboat, and Draco tried to haul himself from the drink.
Please! Help me!
Fuck that.
Recognizing the face seen through his sniper scope, Ryan rammed the stock of the long blaster into the pirate's face, breaking teeth. The sailor lost his grip and slipped back into the sea, floundering helplessly as the skiff pulled away. The water washed the blood away from his mouth, and moments later, sharks were circling the man.
Fuck all of you!
Draco drew a curved knife and stabbed the dark shapes. Then he jerked as something grabbed him from below. Another fin brushed by. Draco was hauled abruptly out of sight into the depths. Grimacing, Jones tucked his blaster away. The pirate couldn't have died in a better way, or his own crew in worse.
Aye, the sea is the biggest bitch in the world.
Captain! There she goes!
Pausing in their rowing, the companions took a moment to look at the distant ship. A wave broke over the Constellation's gunwale, going fully across her deck. There was a great belch of trapped air escaping from the hold. Then the groaning vessel sank beneath the swirling waters. Only the crow's nest atop the mast stayed on the surface for an inordinate length of time, as if the vessel had somehow hit bottom. Then it slid out of sight and was gone. A brief whirlpool formed around the area, hauling wreckage, bodies, and sharks below, only to return them again in a few minutes in a rush of water. The churning waves crashed against each other, the force radiating outward, and soon the surface was smooth and calm, as if nothing had ever occurred at that location. The sharks still circled the lifeboats, but Jones stood and saluted, while most of the sailors slumped over in heart-stricken grief. At the tiller, Abigail stayed safely seated, as did the girls, but even the wounded sailors wiped away tears.
Why say it? They do, Brains? Just a way.
Merely a vehicle? Oh, no. The Constellation fought in the Revolutionary War and ran the rebel blockades in the Civil War.
Carried troops in World War I and was a radar ship that spotted Nazi bombers in World War II. Moved medical supplies to Korea, too. That ship fought in every major American war.
A piece of our history died this day.
But not us.
They lived and died on that ship. How would you feel if your childhood home of Front Royal was destroyed?
Hey, Jones! How far to Cold Harbor?
The other lifeboats smoothly moved closer, only occasionally nudged by a passing shark testing the strength of the craft. The crew backslapped their oars, halting the craft just out of grabbing distance.
3 days by oar. Got any food on board?
Enough for a day or two.
Ryan nudged his backpack with a boot. He knew there were a dozen MREs, some smoked condor, and a single self-heat can of soup, but shared with all the others, it wouldn't make one meal. This trip could get nasty real fast.
Same here.
Jones had made damn sure there was a full sack of dried fish in the skiff before they left, but wasn't about to share with the Outlanders unless absolutely necessary. His crew came first.
We only have water. Anybody got a net or a hook and line?
Dean started to reach for his Bowie knife, then stopped. The handle was hollow, and the pommel could be screwed off to hide things inside, but the fishing hooks and pre-dark nylon line had been lost in a whirlpool in the Carolinas. Now it only held a piece of jerky and 2 live rounds for emergencies.
Nothing here.
Damn.
Any place closer where we can hunt for food or barter for it? A vill or an island, perhaps?
Not that I know of. Cold Harbor is the closest vill. Lots of atolls, most of them only sand and grass. But we can get there a lot faster if we can reach the Jesuit River.
Ryan understood the reference. There were mountains bigger than anything on dry land under the ocean, and the currents followed the ranges, making rivers in the sea. A smart ship could catch one going in the right direction and save a shitload of time and effort. Sounded like just what they wanted.
But, Skipper, That river goes by Forbidden Island.
We got a choice, Daniels. Forbidden Island it is.
No way. We got smashed by the storm, captured by slavers, the captain dies, the Connie sinks, and now this? The Jesuit River? You've gone mad. And I'll not let you chill us all.
Sit down. I'm still your captain.
Never!
Daniels hauled a blaster from his belt and aimed the colossal weapon at the short man. Quickly, Jones drew his own hand cannon, but Abigail stood and made a throwing gesture. The knife hit Daniels' leg.
Fucking whore!
He turned the flintlock toward her, and a knife slammed into his lower back, exactly at the kidneys. He pulled out the knife, and the red trickle became a crimson gusher. Sagging weakly, Daniels tried to aim for Jones again, dying by the heartbeat. A sailor in the skiff grabbed his blaster by the hammer, preventing it from discharging, and another yanked out the knife in his leg. Daniels recoiled and fell over the side to hit with a splash. He clawed at the lifeboat and was pushed away with an oar. Gagging on the salt water, the dying man tried to stay afloat when the sharks arrived and violently finished the job.
Anybody else?
We die either way. Yes, it don't matter much how.
What's wrong with the island?
Don't know for sure. Some folks say it's bad air from the volcanoes. It's got two, and you can see them smoking 100 miles away.
Is death quick, sir? Or do you cough a lot? We can easily make masks from our clothing and wet them in the ocean. That should last long enough for us to get by the deadliest of the noxious gases.
Been tried. This air makes your hair fall out, then your gums bleed. Soon you go faint, then vomit out your guts and die.
Rad poisoning.
JB touched the rad counter on his lapel.
We have a device that can warn us if we get too close.
You show us the way, Jones, and we'll take the point position. Guide everybody past the hot spots.
And if the currents carry us too close, what do we do then, eh?
We die.
Okay. You got another deal, Outlander.
The sun was a blazing ball of fire above the sea. The storm clouds only thin slashes across the azure sky, the golden rays streaming through to sparkle off the ocean waves. Standing near the wheel, Captain Bachman mopped the sweat from his face and straightened his wicker hat. The shade it created helped some, but not much. The air felt as hot as a forge, and it was hours until noon. But it was always this way after a storm, as if the world were born anew. The pirate ship Gibraltar was quiet, the slaves working down in the hold, the decks scrubbed, the rigging tight. They'd already hauled in a load of fish from the drag nets, and some of the crew were sitting on barrels gutting the fish and separating the meat into one bucket, the inedible scales into another, and the guts into a third for the slaves. They'd be delighted over fresh food. Bachman knew his men considered him a little soft on the slaves. But even a horse worked better with food in its belly.
Ahoy the deck! Man overboard! Off the port bow!
The crew dropped the gutted fish and rushed to the gunwales for a look. The bosun, Red Blade, rose from his wicker chair and cocked back both of the hammers on his duckfoot blaster. Bachman approved. Good man. Trust nothing and stay alive. That was the motto carved into the Gibraltar's bow. Walking to the edge of the quarterdeck, the captain lifted a pre-dark eyeglass lens from his vest pocket, tied to a piece of string. It still frightened him a little that it didn't seem to work for anybody else, only him. A gaudy slut had once suggested that human eyeballs might be different. It sounded reasonable until he caught her trying to lift his blaster when they were fucking, drove a knife into her ear, and finished the job anyway. Closing an eye, he held the lens at different distances from his face until he could see wreckage floating on the water, what looked like a piece of a ship's deck. A man was sprawled face down on the sodden wood, the toe of one boot dipping into the waves.
Red Blade, send a skiff to rescue the bastard.
Davy brought us a nice new slave.
Maybe. Let's talk to him first before dressing his hands in shackles.
Pulleys squealed as the skiff was lowered, and Bachman made a mental note to flog the crew for not greasing the metal. In a battle, that could cost the ship.
Come on, scum! Step lively!
The skiff was rowed over to the flotsam, and they hauled the unconscious man aboard. The bosun watched from the bow, his blaster tracking everything. Occasionally, he'd look over the other side of the ship, just in case this was a ruse to divert their attention. Minutes later, the lifeboat was hauled back into position, and the curious crew laid the wounded man on the deck. His face was a battlefield of acne scars, tattoos covered most of his skin, and there was a scabby wound on his arm. He was carrying several weapons, which Redblade took and tucked into a wide leather belt.
He got the same marks. Must be one of us.
Could be, Smarky.
A thick white scar crossed Redblade's neck from ear to ear. Bachman walked over and studied the man for a minute.
Don't know him. But then I don't know all of us. More every day with the Lord Bastard making Vill fight Vill. Smoky, give him some water and wine. Let's see if there's any spunk still in this pile of fish bait.
Aye, Cap'n.
The pale sailor swung around a gourd suspended on a leather strap. He pulled out a cork and carefully dribbled some of the mixture into the man's slack mouth. At first, nothing happened. Then the unconscious sailor breathed in some of the fluid and violently awakened. Smoky continued to pour, and the man swallowed some simply to clear his throat. Almost immediately, he sat up, fully alert, then bent over and vomited on the deck. Crossing his arms, Bachman frowned at that. Idiot had to have been sipping salt water. His guts would be all twisted up inside.
Got a name, matey?
Giles, lieutenant of the... Got to find them.
We'll find your ship, if you're a brother.
Blade, bone, and bones.
Giles took the gourd away from the pale man and drank greedily, excess flowing over both of his cheeks. Lowering the container, he poured some more into his palm and wiped his face. He placed a fist to his heart.
Powder and blades.
Welcome aboard.
Captain Bachman waved off the bosun. As the guard eased down the hammers of his long blaster, the crew relaxed and Redblade offered the fellow pirate a hand, easily hauling him erect.